there, and welcome to the Transparently Jordan podcast, where I'll be talking with a new guest each week, and we'll be covering topics in health, fitness, lifestyle, and so much more. So stick around, and let's get into today's episode.
Radiant Voices Media.
They want me to do well, but they don't care about the sport. It keeps me very humble and it keeps me grounded. And it's okay, you like me for me, you don't like me for the sport and the achievements that I've got. So I think you definitely need to have that separation, and that, like, they're my separation from the sport. I can go to these people and not talk about triathlon.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Transparently Jordan podcast. Now, during today's episode, kind of pre-episode or pre-show, I don't really have anything to really announce, to be honest. So I thought it would be kind of cool to go through a new segment. This is going to be something that on days like today, instead of making stuff up, I'm just going to be going through basically a post and kind of their answers. So I've kind of hit up the internet. I have hit up a question and then kind of, you know, screenshotted all of the answers to that question. And let's just kind of go through those answers. And, you know, with my experience as a marathon runner, you know, qualifications, I've run over 5 marathons now. I'm running 7 back-to-back marathons this July for the charity Bravehearts. I've been asked to join the National Australian running team. So on top of that, of course, I am a physio. I specialize in running-related injuries. So I thought this topic would be an interesting one, and just kind of going through the answers to this question. So what are some running mistakes you wish you knew before starting running? The first answer is, mainly I wish I knew how to hydrate/nutrition properly and increase my cadence when I started running. This is the first part of that answer, I should say, is such an important one. Nutrition and hydration specifically, so important. I remember my very first marathon ever. I hydrated, had proper nutrition the day before, the morning before, was quite all right there. I mean, I feel like looking back at it, I could have had a little bit better nutrition. I remember getting to the hotel where I was running my first marathon and realizing that the room didn't have a microwave. So all of the food that I brought, you know, the 4-hour road trip that I had to drive was kind of no use, really. So I essentially, a lot of it was frozen meals, so I essentially had to, like, run to the grocery store right away, put whatever I could together, and it was very difficult. During the marathon, I did not hydrate nearly as much as I should have, both with electrolytes and water. I remember there were a few drink stations that I was like, ah, it's going to screw with my time. I'll just kind of skip these stations. And 30 kilometers in, hamstring went, you know, 31 kilometers in, my quad went. It was literally something. And when I say went, like, massive cramp, to the point where, like, I had to actually walk off to the side, stretch it out, run another, like, kilometer, and then it would cramp up again. The last like 11 kilometers or whatever were hell, really. And in training, I was able to do 35K kind of fine, you know, like, yeah, it sucked, but the maximum distance that I did in training was 35K. So that was shit. And that is definitely something that I wish I knew as well. The cadence is quite an interesting one, because there is a lot of research out there that does suggest that, you know, increasing your cadence, or I guess the lower your cadence, the higher the risk of injury potentially, simply because I guess you are taxing and using your muscular system a little bit more. Whereas when you're increasing your cadence, you're using more of the aerobic system and it's less taxing on the muscular system. So I've been playing around with cadence, or I have in the past, and I always find cadence a bit interesting because there's research for it and then research against it. Now, the next answer is, no matter the pace, don't take half strides. It kills my knees. I think that just goes hand in hand with cadence. Another answer is, all these comments make me even more certain that I had a damn good coach. The reason why I want to go into this one is because coaching is so important. I love my coaches. I, you know, think even in these last 6 months have improved massively. I feel super confident. Actually, that's a lie. I don't know that I feel super confident for these 7 back-to-back marathons. I don't know if you could ever feel confident for that, but I know that I have the right planning. I know that, you know, my coaches are on it, and I think coaching is super important, especially if you are someone who, you know, wants to start competing, or if you have all of these plans for, you know, half marathons, marathons, this and that. There's only so much you can do on your own, and there's only so much that you can find online that is quality. So that is a good one. Now, the next one is understanding the difference between pain and discomfort. That is super important. Even as a physio, I think this is a super important concept and answer, because, you know, a lot of the times I think we stop or we don't push ourselves because we think we're in pain, but a lot of the times it's just discomfort, but also vice versa. I know it's hard to be in tune with your body, and I think sometimes we don't know if it is discomfort and pain. We push through it and then make an injury 10 times worse, and then you're done, basically. You know, you need to take 3 months off running, hypothetically, and, you know, for a lot of people that's kind of really taxing on your mental system as well. And, you know, I know for me myself, running is great for my mental state. And if I couldn't run for 3 months, which I did, you know, when I had my surgery, when I thought, you know, when I had this tumor that we found, like, I couldn't run essentially from October until the beginning of January, the first couple of weeks of January. And that was hell, you know, from going from, you know, finishing the Sydney Marathon, being in some of the best shape of my life, to needing to literally stop anything and everything. Couldn't go to the gym, couldn't run. It mentally was quite taxing and quite draining. So that's a super important one, is understanding the difference between pain and discomfort, because you don't want to push through something and then just make it 10 times worse. The next one is shoes. Buy last year's model because they're cheaper. there's so many shoes comments in here. You know, the importance of buying a really decent pair of shoes, multiple shoes if you're running consecutive days, things like that. Those are such important answers, because footwear is anything and everything. With that being said, I so understand in this day and age, you know, it is hard to afford the $300 or $200 pairs of shoes, right? Especially if you're needing multiple pairs, and, you know, shoes have a 600 to 800 kilometer lifespan on them, maybe more or less depending on the model of the shoes. So this one is a super important one, because I personally sometimes do that as well. You know, I'll buy last year's model or a model from 2 years ago, because the technology hasn't changed that much. When I kind of test them out, they feel amazing still. So why pay, you know, $300 when you can get them for $119? So definitely don't think, oh, I need the latest technology. Yeah, sometimes there are massive improvements. I can name brands that have massively improved their shoe, and I have hated previous models but love their models now. Definitely understand that. But sometimes brands don't really change their shoes each year. You know, they might have some small tweak and you don't really notice a difference. So definitely check out last year's model. Run your easy runs easy. This one is so important. you are going to get injured if you run every single run hard. You know, your easy runs are meant to be easy for a reason. My coach kind of has had to tell me this, you know, make sure you're doing your easy runs easy, because if you push each run to, you know, maximum, if you increase your tempo, blah, 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 you're probably going to get injured. It, of course, is a lot more taxing on your system. You need more recovery. So definitely take your easy runs easy. They're meant to be there. They are actually going to help your training overall, and they're going to help your progress. So definitely do not forget that one. The next one is, the running, that running can be a lifelong journey, and that any minor interruption in your training due to life, injury, etc., is meaningless in the big picture. If you take the long view, have fun, be consistent, but don't let it consume you. This one is so important, because if you need to take a week off, if you need to take a month off, running you can do anytime. You know what I mean? You can get back into it and whatnot. If you have goals of, you know, doing a 10K run or a 5K run, don't let it consume you, just like this answer suggested, because the last thing that you want is to then hate running and never do it again, or again, get an injury and never be able to do it again, but you actually love it. So don't let it consume you, you know, it's an activity. For 90% of people out there that are running, myself included, it's not a job or anything like that, right? So definitely don't let it consume you. It can be an amazing lifelong journey. So another answer is, it is okay to walk regardless of what you think. You can run the whole thing. If you need to walk, walk. Some days are just not your days. You know what I mean? You might feel like you've prepared, or you might feel, last week I did this 6 kilometer run, I should be able to do it this week. But, you know, maybe the time of the day that you're doing it is different. Maybe you haven't fueled the day before. There's so much that can be different. So just mentally, you might be in a different mental state. So if you're not having it, walk. You know what I mean? The 10-minute rule, I think, is so important. I made an Instagram post about this a while back. It's actually something that I recreated from another creator, because they made a similar video about it. And it's something that I've done so many times myself. Give yourself 10 minutes. 10 minutes to run, regardless of the time of the day, regardless of what you're feeling, give yourself 10 minutes. If you don't want to, give yourself 10 minutes. You know, chances are you'll warm up, you'll run that 10 minutes, you know, whether it be 500 meters, a kilometer, 2 kilometers, whatever it be, give yourself that 10 minutes to run. If you're not having it after 10 minutes, stop. You know, a lot of the times, me personally, I give myself 10 minutes. I'm exhausted in the morning. I don't want to do this. I just feel off. I give myself 10 minutes. Odds are I've warmed up mentally. I've opened up, and, you know, I just feel good after that 10 minutes. Or I don't feel good, but I'm already out there and I'm like, well, might as well finish this. You know what I mean? So give yourself 10 minutes. Another answer, and this one is so important, I think, but also so true, especially in this day and age, with marathon registrations being the highest they've ever been. I know here in Australia, at least, like Melbourne Marathon has sold out, Gold Coast Marathon sold out within minutes, like Perth Marathon sold out, like marathons these days, everyone wants to run a marathon. Which is cool. It's a great goal, but you don't need to run a marathon. So this answer is, if you're able to run 10 kilometers in your first year, that doesn't mean you should start your marathon training. Lots of people come into running with this goal in mind, to run a marathon, but lots of them jump on it too soon. If you've never run before, running a marathon the next year might be a little bit too early for you, or you might be able to do it. But I don't think your goal when you're first starting to run is to run a marathon. I'm sorry. You know, this is coming from someone who has ran multiple marathons, who is running 7 back-to-back marathons. You run 10 kilometers, run 5 kilometers, get really good at that. Get really good at running 5 kilometers, get really good at running 10 kilometers. Go through the process. Love running, you know what I mean? Like, learn how to love running. I don't know what the stigma about running a marathon is. Like, I don't know why everybody wants to do it. I think if you want to run a marathon, great. It is, again, a great goal, but I don't know why everybody is wanting to run a marathon these days. I might be hypocritical running multiple myself, but, you know, for me, again, I only started running marathons like 4 years ago now, maybe. Up until that point, I grew up doing athletics. I grew up doing cross country. You know, I competed in those sports. I loved running, but long distance wise, you know, cross country was a bit different. I did do 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers and whatnot in the trails and whatnot. But like running out on land all throughout high school, all throughout my post-secondary education, like I ran maybe 5 kilometers. That's it. I got really good at 5 kilometers because, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? And then I progressed to 10 kilometers. And then I thought, let's try a half marathon. But it was never really like, you know, in the back of my mind, I think I always did want to run a marathon, which I'm sure that's a lot of people's kind of in their back of their minds as well. But it was never my like intention to run a marathon right away. You know what I mean? I got really good at 5 kilometers. I got really good at 10 kilometers. And then I just like loved running. Like I've always loved running. I've always been pretty decent at it. So it just kind of, I guess, came natural for me to, you know, want to do 21 kilometers and then to do the marathon and whatnot. So yeah, I think get really good at the 10 kilometers. You don't need to run a marathon, you know, like, yeah, it feels good crossing the stage or crossing the finish line, but like, then what? You know what I mean? Like, just love the journey, love the process. That is enough for my tangent. let's maybe get into today's episode. But those were, again, just kind of things that I'm going to try to do more often, whether it be not as long as today's, but again, just because I didn't have anything prepped for the beginning of this episode, I thought that would be a cool little preparation or pre-episode, I guess. Today's episode is with Lachlan Jones. Lachlan is a professional triathlete from here in Australia. He has run multiple world championships or world events. He has traveled. He has kind of competed and is going to be kind of sharing his expertise throughout the years of him training, throughout him competing, you know, his process, things like that. He has a really good head on his shoulders and, you know, super open and honest. And it was really good chatting with him, actually, just to see kind of an athlete at his level being so open, but also being so insightful with himself in a sense. You know, I think a lot of the times athletes are athletes and that's it. You know what I mean? But as you'll tell, or as you will be able to tell through this episode, you know, Lachlan does think about the future and this and that. And he does have kind of some good skills in that sense, which I think is quite refreshing to see, especially as a physio. You know, I see athlete after athlete, and yeah, it's just quite interesting sometimes. But yeah, let's get into today's episode. Thank you all for listening. And again, before we get into today's episode, go ahead wherever you're listening, Apple Podcast, even Spotify now. Spotify has opened this option, but click that 5-star review. It definitely only takes 5 seconds and it helps out the show. It helps out Radiant Voices Media. Thank you for doing that. Yeah, let's get into today's show. Hey, you guys, Elite Supps Australia is your one-stop shop for all of your supplement needs. It has all of the major brands, ranging from EHP Labs to Optimum Nutrition to Body Science to Faction Labs. They have it all. Be sure to shop online at elitesups.com.au and use code Jordan10 to save yourself a little money. That is code Jordan10, J-O-R-D-A-N 10, to save yourself some money. Thanks, you guys. Cool. Awesome. Well, welcome, Lachlan, to the show. How are you going this morning?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. We're in the middle of a training block at the moment, but so a little bit fatigued, but no, we're doing well.
Yeah, and you said you just had a four-hour ride, so pretty hefty. What time did you get started this morning?
5 a.m. this morning, so trying to beat the heat. It's still a little bit too hot to be getting out late, so yeah, it's an early start, but it's got to be done.
Yeah, got to be done. I guess if you have 4 hours, you can't really start any later.
Nah, exactly.
Cool, Lachlan. Well, you know, yourself, you're a triathlete, but maybe if you don't mind, kind of get into, like, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did this journey start with your training and all that? And give us a little bit of a rundown, if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure. So I think mine started a little bit different. I guess I was always, into sport, came from a very, very sporty family. So I was very much a normal progression and a normal way to start. But I was a surf lifesaver back in the day. So that's kind of what I did. I represented Northcliffe Surf Club. Started when I was, 6 years old out in the surf, a little nipper running around. So for a very long time, I guess growing up, that was what I wanted to do. Didn't even know what triathlon was. No idea at the young age. I've grown up on the Gold Coast. It's, the beach is just there. It's a 5-minute drive. So that was very much us. That was sort of our upbringing. But I think sort of as we got sort of in the school system and I went to a very sports focused school, they love their cross country, athletics, swimming, all that sort of stuff. So I just had a bit of a natural talent for running and cross country and track. So I kind of had both going on, my running at school and surf lifesaving, which I was still very passionate about. I just kind of had, I had this one coach, from back in my school days who noticed that I was a good runner who could swim and, thought that's two pretty key elements of a triathlon, let's give it a crack. I had a secondhand bike and, I was terrible for my first couple. I couldn't ride a bike to save myself. I would lead out of the water. I'd fall back to about 30th on the bike and then I'd try and run my way, back into the race. So, I was terrible and I wasn't really, in love with it from the start. Didn't really think it was for me. But I guess the more and more I did, the more in love I fell for the sport. I love the training, there's such a big variety and everything we do, we're training for three different sports. We're not just running every day or swimming. So you can't really get bored in what we do. So I guess that was a bit of a bonus. I guess just naturally, as I got a bit older and sort of, I guess from about, 16, 17, 18, I kind of naturally just progressed into, I found myself doing better in triathlon. And obviously when you're doing well, that also gives you that urge to go towards that sport. So yeah, now we're here. I guess it's been a weird couple of years sort of progressing into the elite sector, but yeah, I guess I've had a pretty relaxed sort of junior upbringing in the sport. So it's a bit different now taking it to that more professional and elite scene, trying to race some of the best guys in the world. But it's cool.
Yeah, I bet. Now, were you always competitive, like at a young age? Did you compete in swimming and, cross country and all of that? Or did that just kind of naturally progress into competition as you grew older?
No, I was always that kid that tried to win everything he did. I looked at him now and, I was always that. I didn't care how old you were or how good you thought you were. I'd always like to think I was better. So I don't know. I just always had that urge to I guess that athlete instinct, you know, you look at the top guys, and if you're one of the best in the world, I feel like you've just naturally got that, whatever it is, swimming, running, surf, life saving, triathlon, you know, I just wanted to win it all. So
yeah, and you need the drive, I guess, as well, right? Which sure. It sounds like you had. So no, that's awesome. When did the competition start? So when did you actually start your first, I guess, triathlon and compete?
Yeah, so I did the I went through the school system first. So I started off doing, you know, we had like the state schools competition, the national schools competition, all that sort of stuff. But I think back then when you're racing, even though you're 15, you don't know any better, you still think like, oh wow, this states is the biggest race I'm ever going to do. You don't understand the future competitions, you're just focused on the racing right now. So yeah, I guess back when I was 15, it didn't really matter what racing I was doing, I still thought it was the biggest thing in the world. I thought everyone was watching me do these races. It's not until now that, you know, I look back and go, there was no need to put that sort of pressure on yourself, but you just naturally do as a kid. I think it was more so when I was about 18, when we started actually looking towards traveling overseas and racing on the European circuit and racing for a spot on the Australian team. That was in 2019 for myself. So I think that was sort of the first eye-opening experience where it was like, okay, this isn't sort of just your school sport stuff anymore. You know, this is kind of, we're here to represent our country. We're trying to make that junior Australian team. We're trying to sort of take that step into the elite field. So I'd say that 2019 was sort of that year where I thought, okay, this is going to be more than just a hobby.
Cool. Yeah, no, and it sounds like, again, you had that drive, which is what you need, but I think probably there's a bunch of people that put themselves in your position when they're at a young age. You know, when you're competing in sport, I think it's quite natural to think, oh, this is everything, you know what I mean? But I think you kind of need to be in that mindset to get to where you are currently. What was it like, I guess, doing that first overseas competition? Like, what was that process like and whatnot? Because I think it's one thing, you know, having or competing in your backyard at school and, you know, in the Gold Coast, but what was the process and what did that feel like going overseas? Because I'm sure there's stress and all of that with travel on top of competing and whatnot as well.
Yeah, for sure. I look back at my results and I realized kind of the results that I had when I was back in 2019, well, actually they were very good. Like I was, I think I was still naive to the whole competition. I was still very like, you know, I was taking it seriously and it was a step in the elite direction, but I still kind of had that social life on the side. Didn't want to let go of that. I was still sort of, you know, I loved my sport and I loved everything I was doing, but I wasn't doing everything that I should have been. So I think for me going over there in 2019, I was getting the results based off the natural talent, I guess, that I have, but I definitely wasn't taking it as seriously as what I am now. So I think, you know, my results were good because I didn't sort of put that pressure on myself. I didn't really realize, and I was still a junior, so I was still racing under 19s, and I feel like under 19s, you can kind of get away with natural talent at that point. You know, the talent sort of hasn't really run out yet. But so I think for myself, I was very fortunate in the way that, you know, because I had that, I was able to get away with those results. But I quickly learned that, you know, the work has to be done to continue getting those results. So yeah, I think it was a very eye-opening experience. Seeing how other countries did it and how other people did it and, you know, how those guys were in everything they did was just professional, you know, from the sport itself to their life outside of the sport, everything was just dedicated to being the best athlete that they could. So sort of seeing that kind of opened my eyes into realizing, okay, this is where I have to go. I have to change some of the stuff that I'm doing to be able to prolong my career as long as possible.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's probably a good realization, and it's good that you had that experience. Now, what does a day like what does your day to day look like currently? What do you do, you know, from morning to night? Because I know you probably need to fit a lot in, you know, being runner, being cyclist, swimming, all of that. And I'm sure there's strength on top of that. So what does it all look like for you?
Yeah, so at the moment, we're kind of moving in to a bit more of a race specific block. We've got our Oceania Championships coming up in 2 weeks, and we've got a World Cup the week. So we've got a bit of racing coming up in sort of the next month or so. But yeah, my training is very structured depending on the time of year that we are. You know, the off season, it's more sort of higher mileage. Very controlled sort of work. So we're doing around 30 hours of training sort of in that off-season break. But at the moment, we'll sort of pull it back a little bit, bring in a bit more intensity, the faster race pace sort of stuff. But on average, in a week, we're probably doing about 12 hours, 13 hours of cycling, about 6 hours of running, and six, seven hours of swimming. So, and then a couple hours of sort of strength and conditioning on top of that. And then you've got, you know, your physios, your massage on top of that as well. So, it's all pretty relative, but somewhere between the 25 hours to 30 hours a week, sort of a training. So, we do most of our morning start off with a swim. So we're in the pool down at Miami, 5:15 a.m. You know, it's a 4:30 alarm clock to get there, so usually that, and then for me it's followed by a run, usually about an hour, maybe just under an hour, and then a ride in the afternoon, depending on if it's a session or not. It's usually 2.5, 3, sometimes 4 hours. So pretty big days.
Pretty big days, yeah, and like that's a lot of hours. But you know, I guess when you're at your level, you do need to prioritize all of that. What's your support system like? Because I know, you know, some people just don't get it. You know, like I think there's a lot of people out there. I know myself, being a marathon runner, like people just don't get. You know, why do you wake up at 4:30? Why do you spend a couple hours a day running and whatnot? So, what is your support system like, and how do you, I guess, push on basically?
It's, you know, sometimes it's a question I ask myself as well, like, well, you know, why am I doing this? Like, it's there's definitely been mornings where that 4:30 alarm's going off and I just think, no, this sucks, like this is just the last thing I want to be doing. Now, I live on the Gold Coast, like I could go to any coffee shop along Burley Esplanade and I'd much rather watch the sunrise that way and not from the pool. But I think you've got to look at the bigger picture at the end. Like, I've got goals and aspirations that I've got a very limited time where I'm going to be an athlete. So for me, I really want to make the most of this very small window of opportunity that I have in my career. So we're an individual sport. It's very, you know, we're very self, I think you've got to be very self-driven. You got to have a lot of discipline. So, and it's a job at the end of the day. This is a job, just like anybody else gets up and goes to the office. The pool's our office, the bike's our office. So, you've got to be very self-driven, but we've also got a lot of us triathletes here on the Gold Coast and we're all in the same boat. So, shared work's easier work. So we're all in it together. We get to the pool the same time and we might not be saying much to each other because it is 5 a.m. but you know, we all know that I'm here, I'm struggling, I know you're there, you're struggling, but let's just get it done. And we might have a coffee after for a little 10-minute window we've got before we're going to go to the next session. So it's good. And I mean, on top of that, my mum's also a triathlete herself, so if I'm not getting out of bed to go training, then she is, and she just makes me feel like crap. So it's good. It's good to have her push me.
Yeah. It's one thing having mates, but then having a family member, it's a whole other story.
she'll make me hear about it as well if she's out and I'm not.
I did that at your age, blah blah blah. Yeah I'm sure.
So I can't let her have that off on me.
Cool. Now, I know, like, being driven is hard to teach, right? Like, you have to sometimes either have it or not, right? But do you practice anything for, you know, those days that you just don't want to do it and whatnot? I know you're saying that you have your mom and you have these support systems, but, you know, there's a lot of the times where sometimes you just have to learn from your failure, right? Like, you know, sometimes you don't wake up that one day or this and that. Like, did it take a while for you to get to this stage where, you know, you wake up in the morning or whatnot, or did you practice anything for that mental state, or was it just something that, you know, naturally you've done day after day?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've definitely had my mornings where I have snoozed the alarm clock and I haven't gotten out of bed. Like, there's those times. And I think the biggest thing for me was I got to a point in my career in the last, probably about a year or two ago, where I just realized that I'm nowhere near at where I was, like, I guess a year or two ago, I'm nowhere near where I want to be. And I think having that realization of I'm actually not that good. I'm not as good as what, you know, I have in my head. I think because I sort of had that peak year in 2019 as a junior, I was sort of living off that. I think for a couple of years after, I sort of thought, oh yeah, I'd won these races. I went to Europe. I was doing well. I had some good results, and I was kind of just living off the back of that. So I think to be able to turn that around and, you know, after getting smoked for a couple of years and just being nowhere near, like, in contention, I kind of had to realize that, you know, I want to be here and the standard for myself's up here, but really I'm performing down here. So when it is like that, you know, you have to kind of have that, you have to force that motivation. You have to force that discipline to just go, all right, like, I remember this quote where it's like when the pain of the current reality is greater than the pain of, other than the fear of getting better, that's when you'll get better. So it was kind of where I was right now was just, I guess, so disheartening because it was so far away from where I wanted to be. So, you know, when you kind of realize that and you put that in perspective, that's when you start to make those steps and make those gains into becoming the person and the athlete you want to be.
Awesome. Yeah, because it sounds like you have some awesome, like, you know, self-realization and reflection skills, which I think, you know, athletes in your caliber probably need to have. It sounds like you look back a lot on your times, on your previous performances and whatnot, but do you dwell much on that type of stuff, or do you, you know, kind of look at it once or twice and then just kind of go from there?
Yeah, I definitely would say I look at it sort of, I usually give myself until I'm back in my home environment. So say we're racing in New Zealand and, you know, we're racing on the Saturday, we're back home on the Monday, I'll give myself those 2 days. And if it's a disappointing result, I'll give myself those 2 days to sort of be disappointed with it, be a bit sad with it, but in that reflection, write down a list of, you know, this is what I did right, this is what I did wrong, this is what I want to work on when I get home. And, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing to sort of beat yourself up a little bit over it. Like, you know, people say don't be hard on yourself, but I think when you are hard on yourself, like, we kind of have to be hard on ourselves. We're trying to get the best out of ourselves. So you know, I'm not saying go and be hard on yourself all the time. Like, you also got to be able to celebrate the wins with those losses. So yeah, I sort of give myself those 2 days until I'm back in my home environment to sort of be a little bit sad, reflect on what I've done. But once you're kind of back in your home environment, you're back to the training program, it's like, all right, that race is passed. Where's the next one? How can I get better for the next one? And then just put all your energy into that.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, no, because I think, again, like, it's quite interesting because you need to have those reflection skills and, need to be hard on yourself a little bit. So I appreciate, you know, you kind of mentioning all of that. What I'm interested in is, how do you, I guess, mentally and physically get through, you know, injury, get through things like that? You know, as a physio myself, I always find that quite interesting. I know a lot of the times, you know, athletes in your caliber, like, you have a little niggle here, you know, as a physio, you're probably not going to fix that niggle, right? So that can be mentally quite tough, I know, for people in your caliber. So how do you get through that type of stuff mentally and I guess physically?
I guess you've got to have, for me, it's always been important on having another outlet other than the sport. Like, you know, I love the sport, and majority of my time and thought process is taken up by what can I do better? How can I be better? Like trying to make yourself the best athlete possibly can be. But, you know, when you have those injuries, when you have those little niggles, I've been very fortunate that I've never had a major injury. But I do believe in having another outlet, to sort of, if that ever occurs, or, you know, if you are sort of going through a tough time in the sport, you can put a little bit of focus towards this and sort of, I guess, have that other network, whether it's work, whether it's a social scene, it's just another hobby, you know, whatever it is, having that other outlet to sort of go, all right, this is piquing my interest as well. I'm not just going to sit here and be a sad sack because I'm injured. Like, I've got other stuff that I'm working towards. So I've set up a few sort of little side things that I guess I'm sort of looking towards for after my sports career. You know, I like to be a bit realistic. I'm not going to be doing this sport till I'm 50 years old. I'm not going to be, you know, running around. I'm not going to, like, my mum's a legend, but I'm not going to be doing it like she is. So I think trying to set up those other sort of outlets and those, whatever it is, financial gains for the future, like that's jobs for the future. That's kind of what I think you need to have as a professional athlete. It also helps, you know, so that I've seen athletes that have had career-ending injuries, and because they haven't had these outlets, they've got nothing to fall back on. You know, they're like, all right, well, I didn't expect it to end right now. Like, what do I do? I've got nothing to do. So, it's important for myself, and I think it's important for other athletes to have.
No, that's really, really great. You know, having those outlets, like, you seem to be quite, like, very self-aware, which is awesome to see. What kind of things do you like to do, I guess, on your spare time? Like, I know people like yourself, you probably don't have a whole lot of spare time, yeah. But every now and then, what do you like to get up to, I guess, to stay active or just kind of chill?
Yeah, like I said, on the Gold Coast, I like to consider myself a, just like probably everybody else that lives here, we're a coffee shop enthusiast. We're at the coffee shops all the time, you know, having our flat whites and our acai bowls, just typical Gold Coast stuff. But yeah, you know, we do that a lot. Hanging out with, you know, I've still got friends. I went to school here, so friends from school, friends from the triathlon scene. I've always loved my surfing, so whenever I have a spare second, I'd like to try and get out there. But usually that's a little bit too active for me. Sometimes you just want to go to the beach and just lie there. But anything like that, sort of my scene.
Yeah, definitely have your fair share of all of that, definitely, yeah. On the Gold Coast there.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, where has the world taken you, you know, for your competitions and whatnot? You've probably traveled a bunch, I guess. Where have you gone, and what has been the highlight thus far?
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I'm very fortunate. You know, I've got quite a few friends that I've went to school with, and, you know, they might have more stable jobs and more, I guess, stable incomes than me. It's different, very different sort of scenes that we've kind of ventured off into. But I'm so fortunate to be able to do what I do now, because I've seen some places that, you know, people my age and some people never get to see. You know, we've traveled around, we travel around Asia a lot. We've been to quite a few places in Japan, been to Hong Kong. So we race over in Europe a lot. Europe's a big one for us. So being able to, I base out of the UK down in Wales when I'm over there. So I was over in Europe for about 6 months last year. So, you know, I'd like to think majority of, I probably haven't seen majority of it, but the nicer spots of the UK. We've been in Spain a fair bit, France, Switzerland, Germany. I've seen a bit of Germany. So I was in Croatia for a little bit back in 22. So lots of sort of like little places, and triathlon, it doesn't take us to the big cities. You know, we're not racing in Barcelona. We're not, you know, racing in the those big glamorous places, but it's still cool to be able to see the little towns, little counties, and experience a few things that I guess are a bit off grid. But it's unreal. I love the European culture. It's a dream going over there every year. Like, it's so much fun.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, how do you goal set? You know, it sounds like you have a lot of ambition and you have all of these goals, but how do you come up with these goals? Are you the type that, you know, does every 6 months or whatever, really? Like, do you constantly evolve and constantly change your goals, or how do you kind of create your goals and what you want to work towards in the next, you know, year, couple years and whatnot?
Yeah, so I would say it's updating a lot, I guess. It's very much like, I wouldn't really put a specific time, like we sit down every 6 months or a year, or with the triathlon and it being an Olympic sport, we definitely, you know, the Olympics is the pinnacle. The Olympics is the main goal for us. You have your world championships races every year and the World Series and all that. But I think in the grand scheme of things, everyone's looking towards the next Olympics. Like, that's sort of just the natural reality of our sport. So for me, I think, like, especially this year, it's a little bit of a tricky year, you know, Paris and everything. I'm sort of just, I'd say I'm that next crop of athletes coming up. So, I mean, you know, never say never. Miracle could happen. I could go win every single race and be in Paris. It's very unlikely, but, I think I sort of play it by ear. You know, we've got the main goal, and for me, I guess that's Los Angeles in 2028. But then we kind of bring it back down to reality, and I've just started racing World Cups at the moment in the sport. So it's all right. Now we've got to try to step up into how do we progress into this World Cup scene, to, you know, not just being a competitor on the start line, but a competitor that's racing for a podium. So it's that sort of looking at races and realistically being, okay, where am I going to place in this? Not sort of venturing too far. I see a lot of athletes, sometimes just because they can race a higher level race, they'll go do it and just get smoked, and they're just not in the race, and there's just nothing really to gain out of that, I don't believe, anyway. So I'd rather just sort of be realistic with where I am at the moment. And you know, we're looking towards trying to race some World Series races sort of in the next year or so, just sort of put myself in the mix. So I guess just sitting down at the, you know, start of the season, having a main goal, but then every couple months sort of maybe seeing where I'm at and seeing if it's realistic or not, and if we have to change sort of the pathway to that.
Cool. Awesome. Now, what is some advice that you have, you know, for let's say the younger generation right now that's listening, that's in their, you know, year 10, 11, 12 and whatnot, wanting to, I guess, get a little bit more serious or starting to get a little bit more serious? I mean, you've been in that position. What's some advice to people that want to start competing or want to get, you know, at that next stage, really?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in, especially the kids that are still in school, I'm a big believer in, like, just keeping it fun. Like, I've seen so many big talents that could have been amazing athletes just burn out, whether it was parental pressure or, you know, pressure that they put on themselves. At that age, if you're still in school, you're under 18 or you might be 18, it's not a career for you yet. Have fun with it. My last year in year 12, I was still playing rugby union and AFL for the school team, just because I was an AFL player. I loved AFL. That's a sport I still follow. So, you know, I just think, because it was fun to me, I don't regret it for a second. It hasn't changed my career in triathlon at all. So I just think, have fun with it. Keep enjoying the sport, because if there's too much pressure too early, you're going to fall out of love, and people could just end up being a wasted talent. I mean, it's a bit scary when I've had parents come up to me and talk to me about their 12-year-old son or 12-year-old daughter and be like, oh, they need to train more. It's like, no, they need to just have fun. Let them do whatever they want to do. Like, it's a bit scary because, you know, I think people think they're breeding Olympians at 12 years old, but I didn't even know what sport I was doing at that age. So, I think just obviously, like I said, have fun. But when you get to that sort of 18, 19, you're coming out of school, learn from the people that have done it before you. I sort of had a good group of guys that are a bit older than me, and they've sort of done the transfer from the schooling system to, you know, the more professional side of sport. Learn from the people that have already done that, because they're more than happy to give the advice. And like myself, I'm more than happy to sort of share my experiences and let you know what I did wrong, so that you can sort of avoid making the same mistakes. And then, yeah, I guess learn from that. But yeah, from the start, no pressure, have fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very interesting point, is that pressure and, you know, parental pressure, but also specializing as a kid. Cause you know, you have athletes like yourself who've been in that position, who are now that professional level. And, you know, there are so many athletes out there that have said exactly what you've said, but, even the research out there does state, like, specializing from a young age doesn't really produce that, you know, elite status or whatnot, and actually does the negative. So it's quite interesting to me, these pressures that the kids face. And, you know, you have this research, you have athletes like yourself that plain out say everything, and, you know, it's just kind of ignored. Were you under any pressure? Did you feel much pressure when you were younger, or like, did you have to overcome anything in that regard? Or were you one of the lucky ones that, you know, had those good supports and whatnot, which it sounds like you did, but were there any pressures for yourself?
Look, I'd say even if there was some pressure, I probably didn't really care. Like, I was very much a kid that kind of just, I just did what I wanted. I still love surfing. So if I wanted to go for a surf, I did that. You know, obviously, like I said, I wanted to win and I wanted to do well. I was very competitive. And I think being around older athletes, I somewhat knew what it took to win. And, you know, I was very onto it from an early age. But I'd say, like, my mom was very good. She was very much, you know, she was on the sideline watching my AFL games when she knew I had to race a state triathlon the next week. You know, she didn't really care. She wasn't telling me to get off the field. It was whatever I wanted to do. Like, she sort of allowed that. So I'm very grateful to her to giving me that freedom in the sport and letting me choose what I wanted to do. I was lucky that I didn't have any sort of pressure. I didn't feel like I did anyway.
That's awesome to be in that mindset there, you know, when you're just a kid, really. Now, what are you most looking forward to coming up, whether it be an event, whether it be something in training, something just in life? What are you kind of looking forward to the most in the next, I guess, year, however long, really?
I'd probably sort of say it kind of goes hand in hand. But obviously, like I said, this sport is very much revolves around the Olympics. We're an Olympic sport, so it's, for me, it's been the first year where I've always had this big goal of I want to be an Olympian, I want to go to an Olympics, but it's always just been, you know, words. I think sitting down with some people in the Triathlon Australia Federation and having conversations with them, and it sort of turned more from just me saying I want to be an Olympian to, okay, Los Angeles 2028, it's coming up, or like that's the next cycle coming up. You're a prospect for that. We want to sort of see you. You're in our prospect field. You could be a developing athlete for that. I guess having those conversations and going, wow, like this isn't just a thought anymore. This is something that could actually come to light. You know, this next 4-year Olympic cycle could be my cycle that I'm working towards. So I think that was a very exciting couple of conversations that I'd had, sort of realizing that, you know, this is actually taking that step. You know, we're a professional athlete, but now we're really taking those steps forward. into being a competitive athlete within Australia and within, I guess, international competition. So that sort of that, and being able to go over, I'll be in Paris this year, watching the Olympics. So I'll just be on the sideline, but you know, I think being able to see that and go, wow, like this could be me in the next Olympics. Like, I think that'll be a big driver and a big sort of reality check in, okay, this is serious now. We kind of have to make those further progressions.
No, definitely take all of that in. And you know, it's great to hear again, like, once again, you are quite self-aware. And I think to many listening out there, it is quite inspiring to a lot, you know, to have these words in your head and then to be having those conversations. So that's good that you put yourself in that position, really. Congratulations on all of that. Now, Lockie, one thing that I do with all guests in this new season is the vulnerability corner. Think I did a little rundown with this with you already. Now, I have beside me five questions. They all relate to vulnerability. I'll get you to pick a number from 1 to 5, and you know, you can answer them as long or as short as you want. But pick a number from 1 to 5 for me, and we can get started with the vulnerability corner.
Let's just go with number 1 to start with.
1.
An easy one. Yeah, I saw some of those questions, and they looked pretty scary. But no,
I know, pretty deep, aren't they?
Yeah.
Cool. So the number 1 question is, what do you most like about yourself, and what do you most dislike about yourself? So these can be weaknesses. This can be whatever really comes to your mind. What do you most like about yourself, and what do you most dislike about yourself?
Wow. Okay.
I know, putting you on the spot there. Take your time, because I know these ones are quite quite deep and hard, aren't they?
What do I most like about myself? I think I'd have to go with what I most like about myself, I'd say my commitment to my processes. Whether that's it is something that I've kind of had to work on. That's probably not something that has come naturally for me. Like I said, I wasn't really 100% sure of what I wanted when I was a younger kid. I was a bit here, there, and everywhere. So I think I always associated myself as the athlete. But once I have set a goal, being able to 100% commit to that goal, even if it's not sort of within triathlon, I've got a few sort of things that I'm trying to work on outside, and it's kind of, I'd like to say my commitment to the process. Not necessarily, like, I might not reach those goals. There's times where I've fallen short and I haven't reached those goals, but I'm 100% committed to the process that I've set before me. And whether or not, like I said, whether or not I've reached those goals, I've given it absolutely everything to achieving them.
Awesome.
And what do I dislike?
What do you most dislike? Or, you know, it can be just what do you think is the biggest weakness or whatever, really, in that regard?
I think the thing that I struggle with the most, and probably, I've definitely seen it a lot in races and past races, is having I'm a very good trainer, very good at, like I've just said, committing to the processes, but doing all that, getting to the start line for me, I very much still struggle, not as bad as what I was, but believing in myself. And kind of going, okay, you know, I've done all the work. I deserve to be here. I deserve the result I'm about to get. Having that self-belief, it's something that I've very much struggled with over the years. I'd love to say that, you know, I can be a very confident person in certain situations, but for some reason with my racing, I'm very confident until I step on the start line. And as soon as I'm on the start line, it's almost like, oh, I start to second guess everything. Have I done enough training? Have I got my nutrition right? Have I done this and that? And it's definitely, you know, ruined a few results for me. I've had to speak about it quite a bit with, you know, sports psychologists and life coaches, and we've had to go down that route a fair bit, which is obviously it's very frustrating. You know, you put hours and hours of work into your physical craft and becoming the best physical athlete you can be, but then that 10% extra of you know, your mindset not quite being there, it ruins it. So I'd love to be able to one day get on a start line and just confidently believe in myself 110%, just go, I've done absolutely everything I can, like this is going to be a ripper race. And I have had races like that, and most of the time I've had a race like that, I've been on the podium. So it's trying to find the consistency. Yeah. In that.
Yeah. No, that mental block is quite important, and it's, I guess that whole psychology is quite interesting really for people in your caliber, because it is such a common thing, I think. Now, finally, Lachlan, how do you, I guess, because again, you are very self-aware, you know, you've spoken in the past about, you know, your planning for the future and whatnot, but how do you, I guess, differentiate yourself, like, you know, Lachlan the athlete from Lachlan the person, you know what I mean? Because, you know, this, for people in your position, this is your life, right? This is your job. This is what you breathe and whatnot. And that's very important. But I think, you know, for a lot of, again, the kids that are listening or the kids that are watching the professional athletes on TV or whatnot, you know, think, Lachlan the athlete, not Lachlan the person, you know what I mean? And then they put themselves in that position. So how do you, I guess, differentiate yourself and have this self-awareness? Is it just kind of come naturally to you, or has it been something that you've had to work on?
I definitely wouldn't say that that comes natural. It is a pretty scary thing, and like we've seen athletes move on from the sport and really struggle in sort of that next step, life after sport, because it's so hard to let go, as you associate yourself as I'm the athlete. I think for me, I've been very grateful that I've got friends outside of the sport, and I think, you know, they keep me very humble in the way that as an athlete, we can be very self-absorbed, and, you know, me and my sport, where the world, like, everyone cares about us. We're it. But I think especially in triathlon, you know, we're not the Premier League soccer, we're not the AFL, we're not this big, we're not this massive, organization. So, a lot of my friends from school are sort of like, look, we hope you do well, but we actually don't care about triathlon at all. Like, so that it's, and I'm very grateful for that. You know, I never get angry at that. I'm very grateful that they want me to do well, but they don't care about the sport. It keeps me very humble and it keeps me grounded. And it's okay, you like me for me. You don't like me for the sport and the achievements that I've got. So I think you definitely need to have that separation, and that, like, they're my separation from the sport. I can go to these people and not talk about triathlon. Like, I love triathlon, but I can go to them and have something on the outside, even with, like, my work that I'm trying to sort of set up, you know, job opportunities for after triathlon. It's associated with sport, but it's not necessarily in triathlon. So it's my outlet to being away from the sport. So I think being able to separate myself, I'd love to just be, you know, Lachlan Jones, the good bloke who does triathlon and he does this and he's a good friend and he's, you know, a surfer and he loves coffee, like that, just a bit of everything. So I don't know, I think that's not something that's come easy, and it has been tricky, but I definitely think it's important to have that separation from the sport.
Yeah, no, awesome. Thanks for that. And thanks for sharing all of that. And again, like, quite inspiring, I think, to many out there that are going to be listening. I think, you know, definitely added a lot of tips and a lot of inspiration, essentially. Now, Lachlan, where can people follow you? Do you have anything that you want to plug in? How can people follow your journey and things like that?
Yeah, so a lot of my stuff, I'm trying to I'm trying to grow the, you know, the social platform. I'm starting to sort of realize how big that's all getting. I'm on it. I'm mainly just on Instagram, LockieJones_. So that's sort of where I put majority of my stuff. I'm trying to grow it a bit further, but yeah, that's where we are. And I tag a lot of those sort of, you know, we've got our world triathlon links with all our profiles and everything on there. So, but yeah, that's me.
Cool. Awesome. Now that'll be in the show notes, everybody. So definitely head there and you can follow Lachlan. But thanks so much, Lachlan, for being on the show. This was quite insightful. Yeah, thanks for coming on.
No, of course, mate. Thank you very much for having me. It's been good.
No worries. Alrighty, everybody. That is it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening once again. I have nothing to end it off with today, so I'll just kind of end it here. I guess the only thing that I am going to say is such amazing guests coming up. I am looking forward to the rest of the season. I thank you all for tuning in. Thank you all for sharing the podcast. If you haven't already, click that share button. It definitely, again, helps out the podcast, helps out Radiant Voices Media. And yeah, thank you again, and I'll talk to you all in the next episode.